This will be a tape recording of a talk given by Charlie Brockwell of Lakeport, California. This talk was given at the Fresno Intergroup Speaker Meeting on Friday, May the 9th, 1980. Charlie Brockwell became introduced to Alcoholics Anonymous in September of 1935. At that time, he had 22 months of sobriety. He had been in the Navy for 27 years and was under threat by his commanding officer to stop drinking or he would lose his commission in the U.S. Navy. He stated that he read an article in September of 1935 in a Brooklyn newspaper which had a picture of Bill stating that Bill had a cure for alcoholics. He states that Bill had given an address in a local delicatessen, and that is where he met Bill and discovered the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. Bill W. referred Charlie to Dr. Bob in Akron, and later Charlie visited Dr. Bob in Akron, Ohio. Charlie Brockwell states that he was AA number 6, that following Bill Wilson and Dr. Bob Smith, there was Bill Dotson, the Akron attorney, and Henry P. of Newark, New Jersey, and Fitz of Maryland, and then Charlie Brockwell. Charlie has some interesting insights in history on Alcoholics Anonymous. One of these, he states that AA is a way of life, that it is a journey in simplicity which leads to triumph over confusion. He states that serenity and peace of mind equal permanent sobriety. He also gave some interesting insights on the symbol of Alcoholics Anonymous, the triangle within the circle, stating that the triangle is a shield in the center of the circle, which is the world, and at the bottom of the triangle stands for recovery, and recovery through the 12 suggested steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. He then states there are 12 steps to unity, and these are the 12 traditions of Alcoholics Anonymous. These are necessary in order for the group to be united, and use the illustration of united we stand and apart we fall. The third side of the triangle is service, and he lists the 12 concepts for world service, thus making a total of 36 steps. And he states that the exercise of these 36 steps is good for you. Charlie Brockwell was 89 years old at the time of giving this talk in Fresno, California. The total playing time for this tape is 65 minutes. Side A will be approximately 43 minutes. And side B will be approximately 22 minutes.
Before I turn this on, what I say tonight, we will go to 5 different foreign countries, which they made a request of me. Small little groups of 2 and 3, like in China. 2 Americans and 1 missionary. That's what they're going to hear what I'm going to say tonight. That's the purpose of my recording. My name is Charlie Brockwell, and by the grace of God, I'm still sober alcoholic. Good evening, my friend. I'm a neighbor of Brooklyn, New York, just a few blocks from our co-founder, Bill Devlin. But I migrated to beautiful California in 1955, and I got stuck here, and I love it. In order to qualify a little bit, Lars, our chairperson did, or secretary, whatever he calls himself, it's okay. I am the last one of the very first six pioneers that started this program in 1935. Now, there in order is this way. Our founder, which you call co-founder. No, he's the founder, Bill Devlin. Dr. Bob, second, is a co-founder. The third man you read in the book, Bill Dudson, is a very famous and brilliant acting attorney. He's the third man in the book. Then came along Henry P. of Newark, New Jersey, four. Then came along Fitz of Maryland, a clergyman's son. And then I came, sixth member, from C.B., as I was known for first 20 years in Eastern States, C.B. of Brooklyn Bunch. That's me. That makes six. Now, five of those are gone. May their soul rest in peace. Maybe, perhaps, right now at this moment, they're holding a meeting of their own somewhere. And someday, I hope I'll be worth enough to join them. And for those that met me for the first time, I'm only 89 years of age. I have a broken right hip, which I sport a nylon plate. My bone plate was crushed. And this kind of weather hurts like H-E-double-L. I'm the only man living, I believe, that got a toothache in his hip. And last September, after my 88th birthday, last fall, I had a stroke. I lost the sight of my right eye, but I still, God preserved my left eye, so I can still see the head in front of me. Yes. But however, I have something to look forward to. The eye specialist in Ukiah, California, treating my eye with this new treatment, laser ray, and reassured me that my eyesight will be restored maybe in a year time or a little longer. But I have something to look forward to. I'll be see you again. So, crooked people, look out. I've been blessed in many ways. Many ways. Especially my age. And you know why I lived this long? I never dreamed I'd face so many multitude of you beautiful people. As I said in Denver and elsewhere, I'm just a backbone of AA. But the backbone needs new blood, and you are new blood. As long as the people keep coming in, I'll continue to live. Right now, at present day, we only have approximately, roughly guessing, or through my information I received, over 1.5 million sober, happy alcoholics throughout the world. My doctor asked me, Charlie, says, how long do you want to live after this last stroke that I had? Well, I said, Dr. Joyce, I don't want to fool around. At least till I'm 110. He said, why so long? Well, I said, for two reasons. One reason, I want to see year 2000, what kind of a AA membership we'll have. And the second most important reason, I want to meet at least 10 million sober alcoholics. How's that? Isn't that a good wish, huh? He says, Charlie, I'm afraid he'll grant you that because I cut you up 4 times, 2 heart attacks, and 2 strokes. I begin to believe you're indestructible. So you can judge it for yourself. Here, a week ago today, I got a little new pin I bought last year, and my driving was short. 5 miles, I live outside of Lakeport, California, 5 miles to post office and 5 miles back. That is daily routine driving. But I want to find out, you know, in another short year, I'll be 90. And I want to find out how my reflection going to respond when I drive on a freeway for long distance. So I tried Charlie out, come driving over here, we go today Friday, and here I am. Now I came here for purpose of conference, H&I conference, as you well know, been held here in Fresno, and I hadn't missed one yet. However, when I was requested to stay over here and give a little talk, historical talk, about AA program and the members. In a portion, chapter 5, Dr. Bob and I wrote, if you're willing to go to any length to get what we have, then you're ready for certain steps. I was willing to lay over a week in Fresno, so I can be with you tonight. In other words, I'm not giving you only wisdom, a pearl of wisdom, I give to you myself by my presence. Thank you very much and God bless you. Tonight my talk will be somehow different. I talked here before, but I finally unlocked my memory bank, how it all began, how this AA started, I call it the birth of AA, and I also going to present later on a certificate that I have. Dated as stated where, when, and how the AA was born. I'll take you back to this little book, the God-inspired book of Alcoholic Anonymous that I had a good deal, both hands in it, in writing. Now, none of my story's in here, but my life is in one of the chapters. Read it and reread it. That was my life. And that is chapter 3. Yeah, that's my life. Now, I'll take you back to Bill's story over here. In 1934, when he was in the hospital, and he was a very sick man. He was so sick that one day, apparition performed itself in his hospital room. He seen the stars flashing on reality. He seen the rainbows, as the rainbows they only have a few colors, many colors. And he seen the flashes, those stars, some exploded, some formed in a new design. To a point when the doctor Schumacher came in, he told doctor, he says, what he saw. He said, am I going crazy? You read the Bill story as he wrote it. But I'm telling you, as he told me before he wrote it, before this book was ever written. Doctor told him, no, you're not crazy. But you better hold on to that apparition that you witnessed. Is better than what you had. And Bill did hang on. When Bill came out of the hospital, he brought out a pregnant idea with him. He should find another drunk and relate his story to him and see whether he could save another human being for suffering that he endured. It didn't work out that way. But you know, it's unusual for certain species to be pregnant. Female species, yes. But male species, that's kind of fishy. Well, anyway, when a female species gets pregnant, they usually go locate a doctor for themselves for preparation of a main event of when it'll arrive. Well, the doctor in question, but Bill was lucky. In 1935, in spring of 35, he finally landed a little job to replace another salesman, and it took him to Akron, Ohio to close the deal. The contract was formulated. When he arrived, he stayed at the Mayflower Hotel. You read portion of that in here, but I'm telling you, as Bill told me, before the book was written, before he wrote that story, matter of fact, the deal fell through. He failed. And there he was, walking around the hall and lobby. And just off the hall, there's another door with a nickel piano. You know, put a nickel in, playing in the bar there. And he didn't know. He was so disgusted. Whether go in there and get his favorite drink, he kind of drowned his sorrow. And then a second thought came into him. And Charlie says, I realized I only had $3.65 in my pocket and return ticket to New York. And that was eating money, not drinking money. So as he turned around and looked across the hall, he saw a plaque on the wall, which you read a little bit about it. It says Akron Church Directory. He went over there. Make a long story short, he called one clergyman, and that clergyman didn't know anyone to refer him to, so he gave him another telephone number, also a clergyman. He called him, and that clergyman didn't know anyone except a lady that was a member of the church, and he was sure that she might be of some help, so he gave this lady's telephone number, and turned out to be Henrietta Sieberling. When Bill called her and told her his problem, incidentally, that woman had experience. Her husband, Sieberling, the original owner of a Goodyear and Sieberling rubber company, he passed away while he was drunk. And she knew, in the churchgoer, that Dr. Bob and his wife Annie were constant church attendants. And she knew that Dr. Bob, how much he drank. And she tried to help him in her own way by telling him how her husband passed away drunk, and maybe in hopes that he'd stop drinking and live. But Dr. Bob didn't pay no attention. He sees a lot of women in the hospital. So he passed it by. However, she invited Bill to come over right away. In the meantime, while Bill was in transit, she called up Annie, Dr. Bob's wife, and told Annie that she got a man from New York, stockbroker, coming over, and asked Dr. Bob if he'd join for dinner. She got company, and this man would like to talk to Dr. Bob about some business or the other, some kind of a... Anyway, try to bring Dr. Bob over. So Annie started persuading Dr. Bob to go, and Dr. Bob says, well, he says, I don't know these high finances people. He says, maybe he's out here selling me some stock and bonds or something. And you know I can't afford to buy anything. He says, we're putting him broke now. Well, finally Annie persuaded him. They went out there for dinner. And he went there, he says, well, I'll go there and talk to him 15, 20 minutes, and after dinner I want to come right home. I don't want to linger at all. That happened. Well, when Dr. Bob came to Henrietta Sieverling's home, Henrietta introduced Dr. Bob and Bill together, and while they were seated in the living room, why, she suggested that her and Annie go to the kitchen to prepare the dinner, to leave two men alone, and they did. So Bill didn't start talking about alcohol right away, but usually business, pro and con, everything went smoothly. Then a dinner was served, and after dinner, they were in the living room, Bill and Dr. Bob, seated comfortably, and Henrietta Sieverling asked Annie to go out in the kitchen and help her with clearing the table, and they did. Meantime, that's when the subject opened up. When Bill told his story to Dr. Bob, and Dr. Bob finally loosened up and told a little bit of his, just a little bit, because he was a doctor. But he informed Bill, he says, look, if you're hitting some kind of medication I'm going to give you to ease your problems, you're wrong. Because there is no medication. I am a doctor, a surgeon and medical doctor. I don't even know what to take myself. How can I help you? You came to the wrong person. Result was this. They got so interested in one another, from 7 o'clock, they didn't go home till 1:40 in the morning. Ain't that wonderful? That's where the AA was born. And as long as Bill presented his pregnant idea to Dr. Bob, Dr. Bob felt like his duty to make a delivery right there and then. Which he did. And in order to help Bill recuperate after his ordeal, he invited him to come to my house and stay with me, Dr. Bob. So Dr. Bob took Bill, and as you read, Bill stayed for a few months with Dr. Bob. So you see, the AA was born at Henrietta Sieverling's home. I hope you understand what I mean. Yes, that's where the birth occurred of AA. Between two men and two men only. Therefore, try to remember, Bill W. is not a co-founder, but he's a founder, genuine founder and the father of AA program. Because he endured the birth of his idea, and Dr. Bob helped him along. They went along fine for a while. Then Dr. Bob had to go to Atlanta for a doctor's convention. That was in June 35. When he arrived at the convention, now this story Dr. Bob told me before this was written in here. When he got to convention, he registered in a hotel, and while in the hotel, he thought, well, nobody will know I took a drink. So as he went by the bar, he picked up the quart of bourbon of his favorite, Green River, and took it to his room. Result was this. He never went to convention, but he got on a train, and it was the wrong train. And he wound up at his friend out of Atlanta, in his friend's home that he happened to know. That quart bottle was, maybe a few fingers left. After he got off the train, he bought another quart before he went to visit his friend. That friend that called took a long distance call to Annie and told where Dr. Bob was and asked him to come over and get him. So, make a long story short, Bill Devlin and Annie got on the train, went to that little town in Georgia, and brought Dr. Bob home. And a couple of days later, Dr. Bob was very, very sick all that time. They realized, and the hospital called him, they had important surgery to perform. Bill Dudley wore a long, old-fashioned overcoat that had two pockets outside and two big pockets inside. The pocket design in those days to hold a quart of beer. We had beer in by quarts in those days. Not cans, but quart bottles. So Bill, he got a hold of quart bottle and put it in his inside coat. And between the home of Dr. Bob and the hospital, he gave that to Bill, to Bob, Bill, and told him to drink it. Sort of a stuff control his shakes. After all, you couldn't perform much surgery when your hands go like that, you know. Strange it seemed, it did quiet Dr. Bob. And Dr. Bob, after a few hours, came out of the hospital ready to go home, and the surgery was successful. Now, is that a miracle or a miracle, huh? I ask you. Even then, that's the first miracle. When they came home, that's the last drink that Dr. Bob had, that bottle of stale beer. Bill believed he used to sober up and get rid of hangovers by taking a quart of beer, open it at the kitchen table, and let it stay overnight till it gets stale. And then he claimed it stopped his shakes. I never tried it. I wouldn't swear to it. So that's how it was. Now, many people want to know how I got into it. When Bill returned from Akron, Ohio, from Dr. Bob's home in the first portion of September 1935, I picked up about a few days later, I picked up the Brooklyn News paper. And inside the paper, I saw a write-up and a picture of Bill that the Wall Street broker and a famous surgeon of Akron, Ohio, find a cure for excessive drinking of alcohol. Cure, mind you. By that time, I was sober myself for 22 months. I was sobered up by a threat of my CO, commanding officer. I was in the service in the Navy at that time. When I read that article, but Bill was smart enough not to give his telephone number and address, but a corner delicatessen store. And I was so curious, because I was sober and dry, but most miserable human being, I never want to go through that kind of life again. I was crabby, I couldn't get along with nobody, to a point where the gold braid used to call me on their red carpet and warn me, he's off on my men. I had a rank that time. You see, at that particular time when it happened to me, I already served 27 years continued service, and 3 more years to go where I'll be eligible for consideration for pension. I couldn't risk drinking anymore, so I gave up my gin and rum. I was a gin hound and lover of rum. So I sobered up on a threat, because the threat was this. As my commanding officer pointed his finger at me at his office, Mr. Brockwell, as of this moment, very this moment, unless you curtail your complete drinking, excessive drinking, I'll be compelled to give you dishonorable discharge as undesirable. That would make me a man without a country. When one is undesirable in the Navy, that's kaput. That's all it is. So I had to sober up. Indeed I did, but I was miserable, I'll tell you that, I was miserable, and most unfriendly to everybody and everything. But when I related that to Bill, he couldn't believe me. When he related his story, I believed him, because he came up with a wonderful idea, find another drunk, tell him your story, and see what the response will be. If the drunk didn't care to sober up, well, at least Bill says it kept him sober, and that's worthwhile. But the poor fellow didn't have no success as he hoped he would. So that's how I met our founder, Bill W., in Delicatessen. And he strongly suggested I meet Dr. Bob and show you how my alcoholic mind worked at that particular time. I only went to this famous doctor, as Bill described him, to see if I can finagle some kind of medication, make my life a little more easier. See? That's alcoholic mind. In spite of my so long sobriety, 22 months, I still had that reservation. Not to drink again, but to feel better. I'd get myself out of the misery that I suffered. I went to meet Dr. Bob, and I told my story to Dr. Bob. And you know what? He surprised me. He said, "Charlie, I believe you." Ain't that ironic? Bill wouldn't. Well, of course he says, "I tried it. I tried it. I couldn't do it by myself. Bill tried it. He couldn't do it. Bill Dudson, our attorney, tried it. He couldn't do it. But you must have been blessed somehow, somewhere along the line of your life, that you accomplished something impossible. But now, what you need now is to know exactly what's wrong with you. Don't think I'm going to give you any medication. Most likely he guessed what I came after him." So he put the stopper right there. But he says, "Charlie," says, "you and I, we have a disease. Incurable disease, just as bad as cancer. The cancer will kill, and this disease will kill if we take another drink. But we can survive as long as we won't take that first drink. Because first drink is too many, and 100 after that is not enough." So when he told me what I carried, disease incurable, then I knew what was wrong with me. I never heard before a word alcoholism until he explained to me. So he invited me to join their foundation movement. That's what it was known first, Alcoholic Foundation Movement. And this Alcoholic Anonymous then came into existence until 1938, after I was writing the book. I came, and Dr. Bob invited me to join him, which I did. So in September, middle of September, or close to my, incidentally, my birthday is 25th of September, and I think this happened on the 20th of September, as my memory don't play tricks on me. I hope not. So ever since then, I've been observing double birthday, my native birthday, and my AA membership birth in sobriety in September 25th. That's what I've been doing. After I returned from Dr. Bob, I seen Bill again. Well, anyway, I want to remind you something. In the book, Come of Age, you look on an index portion pages, and you'll find 1934, 35, and 37, so on. We never put 1936, because that's when disaster struck. You won't find 1936 year mentioned nowhere, except Charlie here. I lived through it, and I see them suffer. That's why it's not been recorded. But I recorded in my book, which I've been working now for 9 or 10 years almost. I'm writing a book about this big book. Why it was called Big Book. Where it originated. Where and by whom. That's my book. So 1936 is printed there. And however, 1938, oh yes, in regards to raising the money for the book, someone asked me if the John D. Rockefeller's donation of that $5,000 was placed in for the book purpose. No. That was for the purpose of keeping Dr. Bob and our partner Bill Doubley and their family's living expenses. And central office, information office that known in those days, so they can answer urgent letters. That's what that money is used for. But the money for this book, Henry P., who was a partner of Bill Doubley, went to New York and bought a batch of blank certificates. And they wrote it down with pen and ink, World Publishing Company. And Henry, Fitz, Bill, they all went out and started selling those certificates, especially Henry. I was the first one bought because out of six of us, I was the only one gainfully employed. Remember, in the 30s, after 29 crash, in 30s we had the biggest depression, to my knowledge. When Brooklyn alone, I have personally observed lines for blocks to no end in front of Salvation Army where they open a soup kitchen. And bakeries open up the bread lines. When a bakery trucks come in without what they did distribute among the grocery store and markets, what they brought back, they put them on a big long table outside, distributed bread to those that couldn't buy it. That's a depression. And I lived through that. Of course, it didn't bother me. I was employed continually. So, in 1938, oh yes, Henry went around. I was the first one that bought four shares, $25 a share, because I could afford it. Incidentally, someday, near future, I saved one share. I turned the rest of them over as a donation where they came from. But I saved one as a memento. And I'm saving that for archives of New York's General Service Office. Someday I showed different places in Northern California, but someday I'll bring it over here, let you see it. But, that's where we got the money, raised enough money to pay down payment to have this wonderful book printed. In 1938, there were 49 of us accumulated. We met at Dr. Bob's home for the purpose of selecting the title for this book. There was only two outstanding titles at that time. The most wanted title was The Way Out. But most unusual title, not even registered in Library of Congress, was Alcoholics Anonymous. That's why we chose that. And that's why it's titled, as is, Alcoholics Anonymous Program. Excuse me. So, Dr. Bob was the chair in the meeting, and after we voted on the proper title of Alcoholics Anonymous, somebody raised their hand up, and Dr. Bob, yes, what is it? He says, how much money have we got to pay the balance on this printing of this book? And Henry's the one that says, well, I haven't collected the money. He says, roughly $5,700. And this same person says, who's handling that money? And Henry says, why, Bill does, of course. I don't trust Bill. Let's appoint the finance committee right now. So you see, you're squabbled about finances in your group. You came by it honestly. You inherited it from us. So Dr. Bob stood up and said, wait a minute, folks. We're not here for that purpose of row or pro and con. We're here to select a title for this book. Now, we did that. And if you if you people feel that way about Bill, let's turn this money out to the board of directors, and that way the bill be off your nasty hook. And that's what we did. We turned that money out to the board of directors. And we made it. Now, that's a part of that history. I hope you remember now. I hope you realize, matter of fact, not remember, realize how fortunate you people are. There's so many of you. Look at you. There was only 49 of us at that particular time. Now, some of these wonder, how about that 100 sober alcoholic? My friend, it took us 4 long, tedious years to accumulate 100 sober alcoholics in the 4 different separate states. Now, how in the world can we get all together like you are tonight? Huh? Don't you think you're fortunate? You got so many of you. There's always somebody fall down, there's 3 or 4 rush in to pick you up. And we had no detox centers. We had no drying out places. We had no halfway houses. They wouldn't even hold us in jail except overnight. And then they'd kick us out. And when we try to go to a hospital, stagger up the front steps, they meet it out there. They wouldn't even let us come in the doorway. And they say, look, we can't do a thing for a drunkard. The best thing we advise you to do, commit yourself to an insane asylum. That's where you fellows belong. That's our lot was at those days. And you people think you've got a hard time of staying sober, huh? I met all of you, and thank God I lived long enough to meet you. So you see, you've been blessed in many ways on this program. So stay with it and adopt yourself to the AA way of life. And I'll tell you what AA way of life is. AA way of life, as I say it, successful living is a journey to simplicity. And simplicity leads to triumph over our confusion. You couldn't find a more confused person than an alcoholic. Especially when you first come on AA. Newcomers, even old-timers, and those in between. I cover all of you. I'm not stingy. So you see, and after you triumph over your confusion, well, you know what you get? Serenity. Peace of mind. And those two things lead to permanent sobriety. Now, ain't that wonderful? Think about it. You can't beat permanent sobriety. I achieved it, but not by myself. I don't say that in the sense of bragging. I send that in the spirit of my faith in a higher power, in AA, in myself. Remember, don't forget yourself. Have faith in yourself. That's important. And above all, try and try. Be extra nice to yourself. There's plenty outside people do the honorary things for you. They'll do the condemnation. As I write in these books when I sign my name many times, forgive yourself because God already did. That's why nobody's puking here tonight. It's your turn to forgive yourself, so don't wait any longer. Stop self-condemnation. Give the credit where credit rightfully belongs. To yourself. It's your life you hold in your hand. So, AA shows, AA program shows you how to do things. No matter what kind of problem you may have, the answer's all in this book. We had that problem worse than what you have, perhaps, or just as bad. And we put the answers we found in this book. All it requires for one to do is to find it. It's in there. It's in there, I guarantee you. And if you're puzzled about it, you come see Charlie. I'll show you just exactly where it is. It's going to cost you, though. It's going to cost you, like Dr. Bob used to say. You see, we had no baskets in our days, and we had a tin plate, tin pie plate, as we passed around. And Dr. Bob also said, well, we're going to pass the tin plate around, and please, use the quiet money.
Side 2 of the tape recording of the talk by Charlie Brockwell, given at the Fresno Intergroup speaker meeting. Approximate playing time for this side of the tape is 22 minutes.
Now, how much time have I got? Okay. I tell you, I'm going to give you people coffee break for a few minutes, not over 5, because the talk I'm going to give you, most of you don't know what it represents. I'd like to have someone bring that picture of three legacies over there. I'm going to talk on three legacies. That I want you to learn. It's not in any book yet. Get your coffee or go shake yourself.
What happened in the past?
Fine, my friends, but you want me for friend or not, I don't care, but I got you for friend. A lot of people is not aware of what this represents. This is official Alcoholic Anonymous emblem, like American bald eagle represents America. This is our emblem. The outside circle represents the world. The triangle in the center is a shield, a guard. Two AAs, Alcoholic Anonymous. The shield we borrowed from Gresham, from Greece, is a protective shield. No ill influence will contaminate those two A's. That's why we place the shield, to protect the Alcoholic Anonymous inside the world. Now, right in the bottom, where we start, when we first come into AA program, we start at the bottom, right? Recovery. That word recovery embodies 12 suggested steps to recovery. That's what that means right there. 12 suggested steps. Then we go work ourselves up a little bit. And there's a unity, a group unity, that teaches us how to get along with one another, how to be united. George Washington said more than once, united we stand, parted we fall. This is where unity comes in, the group unity. Then as we go around a little higher, we came word service. What kind of service? There's 12 concepts of world service. I put them all in steps for you. And gave an idea how many steps you will ascend to successful living, a way of life. 12 steps, suggested steps of recovery. 12 steps, 12 traditions, I put them in steps too. That's 24. 12 concepts of world service, at 36. When you climb the 36 steps, they're not steep. They're sort of just like an incline. You can make it. I made it. And look how long I live. Exercise good for you, those steps. All right. What does the world service mean? That means from emptying ashtrays, wherever you may go and join the group, to become a secretary of the group, GSR, H&I, P&I, public information. That's world service, my friend. Then you become DCM, district committee member. From then you became a delegate, where you represent your group or many groups in your area, where each and every year in April they meet in General Service Office in New York and form the new policies for us to carry and enjoy. It is an enjoyable situation by being sober. Some people claim they enjoyed life while they were drunk, but then maybe they did temporarily. But no comparison with sober life. Most of you ought to know by now. You don't have no hiccups or anything like that. So this is known as three legacies that our founder and co-founders left for us to guide us and to live by. Not to practice. 12 steps. Try to live each and every step and notice the difference in your progress and your attitude, especially in your feeling. Unite yourself with your group, wherever it may be, or how many it may be. Be one of those. Be in unity. And as far as service is concerned, now, myself, I perform a service that I recommend to many of you. I recommend to many of you. I'll put it over here. That's your emblem of Alcoholic Anonymous program. Now, besides me talking to you people, I'm not a professional speaker, no. But I have a big array of early history, and that's why I related to you tonight. As for the first time, I opened up my memory bank and brought out the records, what transpired from very beginning, the birth of AA, and an emblem of Alcoholic Anonymous program, and our fellowship. That's what that represents. Our entire fellowship throughout the world, because we're on the inside of the world. You know the circle? We're inside the world. And we're protected with that triangle shield from evil influence, or any influence that's not desirable for a sober alcoholic, especially temptation. There's sometimes we can't avoid. We can, providing we read the guide in this big book. We can avoid temptation or desire or urge. That's a funny word, urge, to drink, huh? So, the three legacies is our most important guide. It's an all-approved, conference-approved literature. and every pamphlet. How fortunate, lucky you people are. All the pamphlets for free. When I come to meetings, the first thing I do observe how many pamphlets laid out or on display rack or on a table or wherever it may be. And then I also observe at the end of the meeting, very few have been missing. People don't pick up pamphlets anymore. Why? There's the most important information in those pamphlets. I'm not a promoter. I'm not trying to promote to take all the pamphlets so the groups can buy more. No. But in sense of humility, I know what's best for Charlie. I know how Charlie feels and succeeded, and I want the same thing for you. I'm not only sharing you my information and history, I'm sharing myself by being in person tonight with you. What more can you ask? You may get tired of Charlie someday, but that'll be around year 2000, so stick around. I intend to, with my Creator's will, as He tells me, Charlie, I'm going to keep you on this earth because the program you have started of Alcoholics Anonymous is far from being completed. Never will be completed. But He said, you do your best while you're on earth. And I am. That's why I'm here tonight. I had many misfortunes, but here I am. You see, He's the best healer I know. I don't belong to any religion. I don't go to church. But that's no condemnation against my belief in faith. I have complete faith in my Creator. You know, I related today at the meeting, this afternoon meeting, our first three steps, especially for the benefit of beginners or short-timers. I like to relate that again, even for old-timers and those in between, as a reminder. When we accept those 12 steps for recovery, we stop with step number one, we start. Now, step number one comes in two parts. We admitted we're powerless over alcohol, part one, that our life became unmanageable, part two. Now, a lot of them accept the first part, they will not accept the second part. Let me demonstrate to you something. You take a dollar bill, you tear it in half, go to market, see if they'll take it, and see if you can buy anything. You can't buy nothing. They want an entire bill. So that means by taking a half of the step one, don't expect miracles. You got to take it as entirety the way it's written to get benefit from it. When you do that, with step number one, we admitted we were powerless over alcohol and our life became unmanageable, you receive a physical sobriety. You're sober. And step number two is a key word, believing. Came to believe that power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. It doesn't say will, it says could. Providing you're willing to help God. Try not to depend on everything for God. Because He puts you here and He guides you, but after all, you got to do your own walking. He's not going to carry you on His back. So, with accepting step number two, you receive a mental sobriety, restored to sanity. See? And a third step, that's where you have to make a decision, especially newcomers, whether go again to AA meeting and find out what the score is, or what else you can hear or learn. You got to make a decision. Or some of them just throw their hands up in the air and say the last famous word, oh, what the hell's the use? And they'll go get drunk. That's no solution. That's disaster. So you achieved already physical sobriety and mental sobriety. And in step three, made a decision, turn my will, emphasis on will, and my life, over care of God as I understand Him. You receive a spiritual sobriety. There you've got most three important sobrieties. You can't go wrong. When you receive that, the mental sobriety starts you thinking more rationally. And when you turn your will and your life over to the care of God as you understand Him, my friends, let me inform you, making myself an example. My life created by Creator, not mine. It was given to me in my care. And I abused it by drinking. But after AA came to existence, I learned how to take care of my life. And you learning too. But it takes time. This program designed not for those who need it, but for those who want it. Remember that. You gotta want it. And you gotta want it for yourself and yourself alone. Not get your wife off your back or your employer or whatever. So, then you'll be standing puzzled. And all of a sudden you feel there's something in your hand. And you open your hand, lo and behold, you see a key in there. Yeah, where it comes from, nobody knows. The key in there. And you look, and it happened to be all of a sudden the door in front of you has a keyhole. Looks like it might fit. And of course, we're curious people, alcoholics. We'll try anything. So we put the key in the hole, and as we turn, lo and behold, the door almost opened by itself. And when we look through that door, we see a path. That's the path that we pioneers cleared for all sober alcoholics to walk on. And we printed on a very top line on a portion of chapter 5. Rarely have we seen a person fail who has thoroughly followed that path. You take a few steps down there, and then on the side, the right-hand side, you notice there's a little plaque with an arrow points up the path. And then you get a little closer and you read the inscription on that plaque. And the inscription reads, "This is a path that leads to faith that works." There you got it. You're on the path. Don't worry about the fourth step. It won't go away. They're all attached to one another. By taking a personal fearless inventory. And especially five step. A lot of people worry about five steps. Well, I can't confess, and I can't do this, and I can't tell anybody. They want to find an honest person that will not repair the exact nature of the wrong. But let me tell you something. You're taking a fifth step. But any meeting you attend, you sit around a table, a general discussion meeting, whether related to drunk or law, all right? The sooner you open your mouth and tell these people you're drunk a log and the wrong things you did, you took a fifth step automatically right there and then. Except telling myself and God and the other person the exact nature of a wrong, you tell the whole room full of people. So you see, you're taking the fifth step without even realizing the exact nature of a wrong. So don't let the steps worry you. And if they do puzzle you, pick up the book, 12 Step and 12 Tradition, in a long form explanation. He'll tell you what each step means. He'll explain to you. But very few people do that, and that's their problem. You people think you've got a problem. I'll trade you my problem for every one of your problems. You know what my problem is? Each and every one of you. I'm trying to figure out how I can help somebody. Especially during the meeting like this afternoon. I can look at him and say, after he related his problem, I suggested he get a sponsor as soon as he can. because sponsor, in my opinion, is two heads better than one. Always have been and always will be. I was in hope I'm getting through. You know, this isn't a place to doze. You know, I was invited over here to speak. And you people came, I presume, to listen. So let's finish it together, huh? Now, the best way I can suggest for each and every one of you is try to forgive yourself, because God already did. That's why each and every one is stone sober right at this moment. Believe me, He did forgive you. Now it's your turn to forgive yourself. You've been waiting long enough. And some of you think, hey, you and some of you have enough nerve to tell me, Charlie already did. And I know damn well they didn't forgive themselves. Otherwise, they wouldn't have no problem. See, once you forgive yourself, you're clean. Like washing your hands with soap and water. When this doesn't, soaking like that. So, then another thing, try your best to discard self-condemnation, the wrongs we do, the wrongs we did. You see, as an illustration, take for example a horse. It got four legs. And you can see even four legs, the horse does stumble once in a while. What chance of a human being with two legs not to stumble, huh? Because always remember, we're human beings. I've been reprimanded one time by one of my members. Hadn't been on very long. He said, Charlie, why do you call us people and people? I said, what do you expect me to call you? Well, he said, you people this, you people that. Well, I said, Les, I want to remind you. To me, alcoholics do resemble people. Am I right? Am I wrong? All right. So you see, but you see the difference with people. Different. You're, as I said before, a little while back, you're a beautiful people. And that's something not easily obtained, being a beautiful people, and be called by someone that's not so beautiful. And another thing, try this. I brought a bushel basket of pearls of wisdom, and I'm going to spread it all over. Pick out the ones that you like, whether it's color or size. May your conscience be your guide, and take it home with you. Be good to other people, that's when you're best to yourself. How's that? A little delay, just what I wrote in this book. This is my last writing for this book. In chapter 11, page 164, second paragraph. Still you may say, but I will not have the benefit to contact with you who write this book. Take a good look. Yeah. very last word than the bottom of the last paragraph. May God bless you and keep you until then. That's it.
The sanity has now been restored to me. Read it. Yes, sir. Sanity has now been restored to me. What a guarantee that is to be a sane human being again. The 11th principle tells me I have no mental defense against the first grade. I'm a mental genius. I'm a mental giant. I got 6 degrees, including 2 doctorates. And they tell me I have no mental defense. I know I don't. But they do tell me in the 12th principle that I have a daily reprieve. And that's contingent upon my spiritual condition for today. That's all. Only for today. Only for today. The 13th principle tells me that each day is a day I must carry the vision of God into all my activities. Each day. I must carry the vision of God into all my activities. How best can I serve thee? Thy will be done and not mine. And then you can pick up on the rest of the 240 principles. If you look in the book of Alcoholics Anonymous, the word principle means answer or solution. When I came to you people, my answer was 4 fingers of bourbon for everything. You have given me 250 principles to live by. These are my tools that I use today. And I don't have to drink, and I've never had a better life. The 11th step tells me, when I retire at night, I must reconstruct my day. It tells me, page 87, what I'm supposed to do. This, and this at night. And the next paragraph says, upon awakening in the morning, these are the things I have to do. The next you give you 2.5 pages of the things you have to do. Those are a few of the have-tos. The 11th step tells me I only can pray for 2 things. I can't pray for me anymore. I only can pray for the knowledge of God's will for me, and if I already carry it up. My old laundry list has to go. I can't even pray for me anymore. You ever realize when you turn your will and your leg over to God, there isn't too damn much left? Then it's his job to take care of me, and it's my job to do his will. You may say, well, then, what's God's will for you? Page 77 says, I must fit myself in to be a maximum servant to God and all other people. That's the only reason why I'm here present tonight, to fulfill that promise. The 12th step tells me, after having had a spiritual awakening, what is my spiritual awakening? When I came to you people, I was a selfish, self-centered, and self-conscious person. By the way, that's the definition of an alcoholic, selfish and self-centered, and self-conscious. As a result of working this program, the 11 steps, I became God-centered and God-conscious. God's doing for me today what I couldn't do for myself. I am a sober, grateful member of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I never had a cigarette. The second part of the 12th step is what I started out with. It says, we try to carry this message to the alcoholic. The message that gave me this way of life. Hopefully I've done it. And the 12th step says, we practice these principles in all of our affairs. What principles? There's 250 between pages 1 and 164. And for our new friends, if I was to summarize this thing up, I could do it in the last paragraph, page 164. I had to abandon myself to God as I understood God. I had to admit my faults to Him and to my fellow man. I had to clean up the wreckage of my past and and give freely of what I find in this program. And now I can walk hand in hand with you down the road to happy death. I never met a stranger in Alcoholics Anonymous, because all I have to do is put my hand out and say, hey, I'm John, I'm an alcoholic. And we instantly know each other. So there's no strangers in Alcoholics Anonymous. And if you feel you're not a part of Alcoholics Anonymous, you haven't stuck out your hand yet, try it. And when you do, ask the person to tell you how their program works and be willing to sit and listen. Listen, I said, not think. Listen. One day you're going to find this way of life. The greatest life I've ever known. Another thing that I found very helpful in this program, and I like to pass it on to the new people, the old timers will attest to it. A lot of meetings make this program easy. A few make it hard, and none make it impossible. Just keep coming to the meetings. I want to close with a little story I tell that happened to me in 1977 in Italy. Now, A is only about 15 years old in Italy. That was 6 years ago. One night I was coming into Milan. I'd come up from Florence. No air conditioning in that damn car, and it was sultry and hot and miserable. And we caught the traffic all the way. When I got to my hotel, I felt like hell. And I know what to do when I feel like hell. I go to the bell captain and I tell him I want Alcoholics Anonymous. You may be in a foreign country that you don't speak their language, but that's the reason why he's bell captain, he speaks your language. And all you have to go through is tell him that you're an alcoholic and you need to talk to Alcoholics Anonymous and watch how fast he gets it. He didn't want any problems that night. Now, I can't speak Italian. But he got on that phone, and he come and told me, he said, there will be a man named Giovanni Leone over to see you at 7:30. So I went upstairs and showered, changed clothes, and came down about 7:30, and here was a little Italian guy. He wasn't even 5 foot tall. He was in his work clothes, and this was a pretty swanky hotel. And he was walking over to me and he said, Giovanni, alcoholic. And he can't speak English. So I got permission to take him into the dining room. And he put us in a dark corner. And he shared his program with me for an hour in Italian. I shared my program with him for an hour in English. And after 2.5 hours, we stood up and threw our arms around each other and there were tears in our eyes. I walked him out to the foyer and he went out to the dark of the night and I went upstairs and I did not sleep. That's Alcoholics Anonymous. There's no strangers in AA. And there's no language barrier. Because we share the message of love. He cared enough to come and share with a stranger in his own hometown. He knew he'd never see me again. And yet he gave 2.5 hours of his evening to somebody he'd never see again. And he even gave me a hug and wished me well on the way. That's Alcoholics Anonymous. For our new friends, why don't you start being good to yourself?